This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Brewski, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
The Gonsalves family is filing a lawsuit against WSU. That's the university that Brian Koberger was a teaching assistant at, not the school at which their children were attending or their daughter was attending, but certainly part of the ecosystem of the story of Brian Koberger. Today we're going to be tackling the thing everyone tiptoes around, the difference between a person who's simply socially odd and a person who is showing red flags that point towards potential danger. Washington State University had dozens of complaints against Brian Koberger, women who felt physically uncomfortable, faculty who documented behavioral issues, a department that held mandatory meetings because of one student, one teaching assistant, and at the same time, a man with no criminal history, no documented violence, no official reason to remove him really from anything. This is where psychology, pattern recognition, civil liberties, and institutional failure all collide. And nobody breaks down that collision like Robin Drake, who's going to help us get into this conversation and help dissect what exactly it is we're looking at when we hear about the Gonsalves' decision to sue the school. They're not saying that the school would have prevented the murders. What they're saying is, they have an obligation when you have enough complaints to do something a little more proactively than they did, because they did eventually fire him. But it did take a lot of checking boxes and a lot of meetings and a lot of this and a lot of that before anything actually took place. Robin, when you look at the specific behaviors reported, the intense staring, blocking doorways, hovering near women's offices, what do those behaviors indicate from a human behavior standpoint, not criminally, just instinctual human signaling?
Yeah, so those behaviors that Koberger was exhibiting are behaviors of control. Control and inappropriate, healthy behavior, unhealthy behavior, I should say, just because he was off socially, just way, way off. And like you said, just because you're socially off doesn't mean that you're doing any criminal activity. But when you look at, as we do, our arcs and norms of human behavior in context in certain areas, he was definitely standing out from that. And part of that is he would then fall into, especially as an employee, a standard of conduct that is incongruent with his condition of employment, because every employment organization has, you know, a clause in there that says professional conduct. Mm-hmm. And clearly his behavior was unprofessional, but what they lacked was leadership. And it doesn't surprise me at all that the family that exudes leadership, mm-hmm, is suing the university that failed completely at leadership, because that's what this was. The more and more I dug at this and said what was missing, because it's hard to kind of put your hands or fingers on it. It really just came striking out at me, when that was leadership. There was kind of a policy, but when you fear enacting a policy, it means that people are fearful of what will happen to them. So they're, mm-hmm, not going to take action. And so what empowers people to not be fearful? Strong leadership that backs a policy. And that's what they lacked.
So do you think they could have done, if they had gotten in Brian's face and not aggressively, but look, we've got complaints against you, we're concerned about, well, right, but spoke to him and said, we are not going to tolerate this. Does that change how a perpetrator performs in that environment? Do they become more aggressive? Do they go, wow, okay, I'm being disciplined, I need to do something? What happens with somebody like this? Not necessarily in Brian's case, but when you see someone like this, what do you do?
Yeah, it's a really sticky one, Stacey, because, yeah, I mean, someone like Koberger, where, again, I think he was on an arc of predestiny of doing violence against, yeah, human beings, because he had a lot of issues that were unable to be mitigated. Because I really think his family did a good job of trying to mitigate it. Could they have done better? Hindsight's always 20/20. Anyone can always do better. But what happened in this case was that if you're going to intercede, and they needed to intercede earlier, and it's one of the hardest lessons I learned in the Marine Corps as a young Marine Corps officer, was that, hey, if I had a behavior of one of my Marines that was off, I had, and I had, when I was at Parris Island, I had drill instructors that were four times much experienced, twice as old as me, that I was leading. if they did a behavior that was completely inappropriate and off, that was against policy and procedure, I had to sit them down in front of me. I had to write it out exactly what the expectations were for the behavior, what the standard was, how their exact observed behavior was incongruent with that. I sign it, you sign it, and then we'll have another discussion if this doesn't change in a certain time frame. And then you have it documented, and then you can dismiss someone. Now, to the greater question, would that have prevented anything? Those hypotheticals are so hard because he was on an arc. But what I saw from what the Gonzalez's were trying to do, and rightfully so, they're not saying that this would have prevented the deaths of our daughter or the other three children, but it might have mitigated it, might have done something. But at the very least, there should be some sort of culpability for a lack of leadership, a lack of enforcing policies. Because when I did deep research on this, I said, all right, so does WSU have a policy of this kind of conduct? And yes, they do. And I said, who's responsible for that policy? It can't be locked down. I said, who came up with that policy? It can't be locked down. It's like the HR mm-hmm. office. I said, who is ultimately responsible for that policy? In other words, who does it get reported to? And it's nebulous. And when things are nebulous, there's fear. No fear, people take action until it's shoved down on you, because people are so afraid of being labeled. All these different labels today, like any form of profiling whatsoever, and we'll get fearful. Now, there are universities, I did the research on this, there are universities that actually have a centralized point where you can report things without fear for not being profiling or anything like that. Like UConn has it, University of Wisconsin has it, because I was trying to do we have a compare and contrast where there's universities doing it properly? Yes, there are. It's just in this case, they had a policy-ish, but zero knowledge of who's responsible for report this to, besides department heads, which then are going to have to pass it up. In other words, there was no centralized point of leadership that said, hey, I am on this. I got your back. We got to intervene earlier. And here's how to do it. Like literally just what I said, it is so easy to not label someone as good, bad, right, or wrong. Here's just behavior that's incongruent, like blocking doors. Right. Like hovering over people, like staring at people. These are actually observed behaviors. You put it down on a piece of paper. This is what we're defining as unprofessional for a teaching assistant. Don't do this again. Don't ever get in the way of someone again. Don't do this behavior again. I sign, you sign. Because now it's not me saying, I heard this or I think you shouldn't be doing this. No, here's the behavior. Don't do it. Sign, you sign. If I see it again in a week, you're gone. If they'd done that earlier on, things would have.
And it seems like they did do that to a certain extent. It's just more so about how effective was it? And obviously, some people, you can write them up all you want. If this is how they act, it's how they act, and you're not going to change it if they don't think anything's wrong. But it's at what point how many warnings do you give? Eventually, they did fire him, but it took many, many months to get there, and many, many complaints to get there, and that's where it's the weird ground. It's that middle. It's that gray area where you have the university, or you have whatever entity you want to talk about, whether it's this case or another case, where people are so fearful that they're going to step on the rights of basically the perpetrator, or someone who's causing the uncomfortable behavior, if it's standing in the doorway or whatever it may be. They're fearful that they're going to offend that person, that person is going to have some sort of rights that trump the rights of the person being felt uncomfortable, because you get into the territory of, well, are they autistic? Is this some sort of autism thing? Or there's always the what ifs. And there's too many what ifs where people just don't seem to be able to come out and feel legally or professionally safe to call out this type of behavior in any sort of real, effective, true, authentic way. And then you have the people who are portraying this behavior that either are completely clueless about it, which I think Koberger was, or they are doing it intentionally and they know exactly what they're doing and they're not going to stop. But it's how do you How do you correct this? How do you get in there? How is WSU wrong in what they did here? They did document. They did have talks. They did sit down. They did warn. It didn't happen like that overnight, but they did follow up on all these things. And after so many strikes, they did finally get rid of him. Mm-hmm. And at about the pace I would expect a university to do it at, too. And maybe that's the weird part here is we all expect this to take forever because that's how it seems to go because of so many precautions. I think WSU sits in a really weird place where damned if you do, damned if you don't. Mm-hmm. They can't just fire the guy for being weird and awkward and creepy. That's not breaking any laws, and they can't kick him out either for that. They're going to get sued by him or whoever they would be doing that to. At the same point, you're putting all these people in possible harm's way, but it's just possible. We don't know because there hasn't been any sort of actual harm done other than them feeling uncomfortable by the actions of Koberger in this case. I don't know where to sit on this. I mean, I wish we could do something more proactive, but I feel legally, I think their hands are tied.
So I think it's a frustration because I don't think people have thought through this innovatively. And here's okay. Here's an idea of what I think could be done. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm with you. And that's why I think it's going to be a tough lawsuit for the Gonclaves to pursue just because of all these things you're talking about. They didn't fail in the ultimate execution. Where I believe they could do better is the tempo. And when you actually, and here's a way you can escalate that tempo, because tempo is slowed when people have fear. And the way you get over fear, again, let's go back to the leadership model. And here's what you can do, because this, I'm going to walk through what we did on the espionage side of things. Because when you're going to do a major case where you're going to try to, entrap a spy, but when you're trying to do a double agent operation and you're trying to pass information, fake information to a bad guy on the other side of the steel curtain or whatever on the Russian side or something, you have to get pre-approvals for things. Mm-hmm. And you're always constantly going through what ifs, what ifs, what ifs, what ifs, what ifs. We go through legal counsel, we go through the CIA, we go through State Department, we game plan out all the what ifs so that when we actually go to execute, we can execute this fast. Because if you slow tempo, the bad guy thinks they have freedom to do whatever they want. So I know it's kind of nebulous what I was talking about. So here's what we do on this side. Here's where people do much better with tempo. And also, when tempo is in place, it's actually a great mitigator of abhorrent actions, because when a potential perpetrator knows that there's clear reciprocity for an action they're taking, they're less likely to take that action. Because if they can live in the gray zone, they're going to live in the gray zone as long as they possibly can. When things aren't clear, when they're not defined, when they don't think there is courage by people to take action. Because how they do it, they poke a little bit. Let's see if there's a reaction. Let's poke a little bit more, see if a reaction. And if there's slow to reaction, they're going to keep poking and trying to encircle their realm of control because they're slow to react, because there's soft words being used against them. Because remember, we're dealing with a highly developed predator that doesn't use soft words, that doesn't think softly. And when you're being treated that way with kid gloves because you're afraid of this, and this. So how mm-hmm. do we empower people to not be fearful? All these things we're talking about here is what you play out before it happens. Everything, all these ahas and what ups and what things we should have done are reactionary. No one there thought enough proactively to what do we have to make sure we can do like this if this situation happens. So there's tons of case studies like Koberger out there. What you do is this. If you're in the leadership of this university, of HR, is you say, all right, here's our policy. Now we got to play to what ifs. How do we enact this policy, empower people to feel safe to report, empower people to feel safe to do X, Y, and Z, and how do we do it so that we feel safe to support them? Well, we got to get the lawyers involved. How do we do this so it doesn't make us liable? So we need to paper it this way. We need to paper it this way. So you do training, you use sensitivity training, and you actually empower people to know here's the process, here's procedure, here's the measure, here's the legal side. So that way, any of these nefarious people that think, oh, they'll never do it because the law's on my side. No, we let them know right up front. We talk to our lawyers. Lawyers say this. This is how we're going to do things. So again, and what's this all doing? We're treating people with respect. We're being ultimately transparent. And for what? Safety. Safety can't take a backseat ever. And if we got to do these things and don't go through these machinations ahead of time to give our lawyers the what ifs, it's something like a Koberger case, but it's unsafe. What can we do? What legally can we do? What legally can it do? So that way the people are actually on the ground at the granular level, feel empowered to do something so it doesn't drag on and drag on. And so that the person, the perpetrator of evil, doesn't feel they can live in a gray zone for as long as they do.
I mean, in this case, I mean, I hear you. It's and that's where I think a lot of it just backs up to is the legal end of things of, well, you can't do this
because of this, because of that,
right? Because everybody has too many rights, essentially is what it comes down to. When everybody has too many rights, nobody's actually being protected because everybody has the right to do everything to everybody. And then what do we have? But with this, how, I mean, in this case specifically, let's say Koberger never went through and actually killed the people, was just autistic and creepy in his mannerisms, completely clueless about them, because I think he is clueless about them. I don't think he has any idea just how creepy his behavior is and how bizarre it is. And I think it's just his modality. It's how he works. It's how his brain functions. His brain tells him, this is what you do. This is how you do it. And then the rest of the world, it's like, Jesus, why are you acting like that? And he's just as confused, like, why are people reacting to me this way? He's off. I mean, it's part of the autism, and the way that he's seeing things and the way he's interpreting things is very different than the way other people would do it. So how do you get in there in a case like this and try to correct behavior that really can't be that corrected because it's just part of who he is? If you're autistic, you can't be like, oh, let me be less autistic for you today. It's just how the brain works. It's how they're going to function. Can there be learned behavior of, well, I'm going to walk this back. I'm going to learn not to do it. Emulating behavior. Yes, that certainly is a thing to a certain extent. Again, depending on where you are on this spectrum and what you're going to understand and what you're going to pick up and what you're going to accept. I just don't know. And look, I'm not trying to defend Koberger here, and I'm not trying to defend WSU, but I just don't know when you have somebody that has a brain that works as differently as Koberger's did, that you can get out in front of this and foolproof predict or stop or really do much of anything. And what do you do at the end of the day here? Let's say they did act a little faster. So they fired him. If they would have fired him 2 months sooner, would that have stopped anything? Maybe he would have moved back home. Maybe. Yep. But at the same point, you're passing the trash then, which is the problem that we have in a lot of education systems, a lot of public education systems, elementary education and high school education and things of that nature. That's what we were talking about earlier this year with the Devil's Den case and how he got passed from school to school to school. Yeah. And like, how did nobody say anything? How did nobody do anything? Well, they did kind of, but it all ended up being locked down into the confines of each school, and nobody could share their stories with anybody. Again, all because of rights, because of the legal issues, not because people didn't want to do what was right, what was morally right, what would actually be ethical and for the safety of others, but because, again, laws and fear of being sued. It's a lot of people operating with a lot of fear in every which turn they come at in situations like this, it feels like.
Yeah, these are tough ones for us as a society, but I'm going to give probably a controversial Gen X answer on this one. You know, some people just aren't suited for certain jobs.
Yeah.
You know,
100%.
So if he can't overcome his autism and how he's communicating, okay, we can work on it. We can try transparency. We can let your student body know, hey, he's working on these things. And if everyone agrees, hey, let's give him a shot. Great. But otherwise, then you shouldn't be fucking teaching. You know, get another job. Yeah. So, I mean, I want to be an astronaut. I want to be a Navy pilot. I want to do all these things in life. I mean, people ask me all the time, Robin, how'd you get to be the chief behavioral analysis program in the FBI? It was easy. I failed at everything else I wanted to do because I was incongruent with with what I want to do. I didn't have the intellect to get through aerospace engineering. So you know what? I couldn't be an aerospace engineer. You know what Robin did? He figured out something else. And so just because he thinks he's entitled to do this because he had Professor Ramsland saying he's good at criminology, you know what? But maybe you really shouldn't teach because you're kind of a creepo. And if the bottom line, the university doesn't exist to give him a job. The university exists to educate their kids in a safe environment so they can learn. And if the guy you have teaching them is incongruent and incompatible and no one's learning because he's such a friggin' creep, then you got to get rid of him. It's incongruent. Go find another job. Not saying that you're dysfunctional in life, but you know what? Your lack of ability to communicate and not come across creepy. And if you, again, if you're not overcoming it, you put him on a PIP or whatever you're doing. If it ain't working, you just aren't meant to do this. There's a lot of people in life. You're just not meant to do things. That's why you get fired. That's why you move on. That's why you try other things. And that's how we learn and get better, because we get a good life rep in. Because he, I mean, just think about what he could learn. All right. Instead of being coddled and told you're great at doing this and eventually, can you imagine if he had actually passed and became a professor? Who the hell would take his course?
Right.
It's ridiculous because he's so creepy. He's horrible. He's misogynistic. All the things he's accused of. So the thing he was actually pursuing in life was completely incongruent with him being successful at it. So find something else with that skill set.
Are there places, and I first let me preface it, I am not defending Brian Koberger, but is there a place for him to get the help that he needs to do the job that he wants and have, I don't know, somebody to babysit him? And it's not the university's job, but are there places in our world for someone like him who has something going on so that he can do a job, use his skills, and maybe learn something instead of just being thrown to the wolves?
So I think so, yes. I don't know those places, but I know some good friends that became good friends and associates and contacts of mine that have, that are way high on the spectrum, that actually are barred lawyers. They're very good at certain things because they actually have the one thing that Koberger completely lacks. And so people can overcome an awful lot when you have what? Humility.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I suck at this. I'm going to get in reps over here. So my entire life, oh boy, I'm using a me statement. I hate these things in here because, again, I'm hypersensitive to it. But all my active empathy, curiosity, understanding, deep love of others, and being so deeply curious when I see things and people incongruent with things that I normally accept in life, that wasn't me 50 years ago. You know, I grew up a snarky, self-centered, not self-centered really, but, you know, snarky extrovert, you know, in upstate New York that, you know, I had a mouth that ran away with me. And in order to overcome those things, you get a lot of reps and humbling moments. But I had only one thing that was going right in my mindset, and that was I owned it. When something went sideways, I said, oh, I must be doing something wrong. And see, that's what Koberger has got wrong. That's what all these broken people we talk about on the show have wrong, is they have so little emotional intelligence. Their EQ is so bottomed out. I don't care about your IQ. It's no measure of life success at all. Their EQ is so bottomed out, their self-awareness is so low that they have a lack of ability to improve in these areas. Their arc, their baseline is flat. And so people can learn. They can get better. If you're on the spectrum, can you do jobs? And Stacey, when you said it, it's like, no one's entitled to a job. No one owes you a job. You either can get better and you do the job or not. And he clearly couldn't, because his effect, his baseline understanding of who he was zero. Hey, go get some reps, go get some humility, and then you can try again. But now you're completely incompatible with this job. You know, my son, you know, the fighter jet pilot guy, and my daughter too, you know, the amazing labor and delivery nurse. Every day I tell my son as he's going out to fly this jet, I said the three things. As he's getting a bad day coming up or a challenging day, I always remember him these things. I say, stay positive, stay safe, and be a great student. That's our mantra in life. You do those three things and everything else will flow. But that's exactly what he missed. Koberger was not positive. He's always a wound collector. Definitely not a good student. And safety, he make people feel unsafe. And so he was bottomed out on those three major pillars that actually allow us to move forward in life and get some great healthy reps in.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now. And don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.